This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
New suspect sought in Germany. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Wednesday, December 21st, glad you're on board. Here's what we have for you this hour.
German investigators are reportedly looking for a Tunisian man in connection with a deadly truck attack on a Christmas market. We'll take you live to Berlin in just a moment.
Another deadly fireworks blast in Mexico. More than 30 people are reported dead following explosions at a market outside Mexico City.
The Obama administration has indefinitely blocked drilling in large areas of the Atlantic and Arctic Oceans, but there will be no immediate impact.
And with all the talk of police shootings, ones they've conducted and ones they've been victims of, a behind-the-scenes look at the dangerous life of a cop on the beat.
15% of police officers suffer from some post-traumatic stress syndrome symptom. 15% is, that's kind of husky. That means out of every 10 police officers you see, at least one of them is dealing with PTSD.
Wall Street Journal reporter Gary Fields shares his story titled The Hidden Hurt of Life on the Police Beat. He's here later in the hour. Massive explosions at a fireworks market outside Mexico City have left more than 30 people dead with scores of others injured. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
It's the third time in 11 years that the San Pablito market has been destroyed by explosions. It happened also in 05 and 06. The numerous blasts and subsequent fires yesterday tore through hundreds of small stalls that were well stocked for the holidays. Videos showed a series of explosions sending rockets skyward, piercing thick, billowing smoke. Meanwhile, fatal fireworks explosions are all too common in Mexico. One 3 years ago killed 13 people and injured more than 150, not far from yesterday's incident. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Despite the latest carnage, a nearby resident said the market should be rebuilt. Most of the residents of the town live from the fireworks trade and take pride in the industry. Manhunt in Germany for the driver of a semi that plowed into a crowded Christmas market in Berlin. Police had initially detained a man from Pakistan, but he was released yesterday due to lack of evidence. Now approaching 48 hours since Germany's deadliest terror attack in decades, without a suspect, there are fears of more violence. Sunday's attack left 12 people dead and 48 injured, with 14 of those still in critical condition. ISIS has claimed responsibility. Kellyanne Conway is a senior aide to President-elect Trump.
It's not enough to say you're going to contain the terrorists or negotiate with them or hope that they don't advance anymore. It's somebody needs to get serious here. When he says eradicate, he means find a way to make sure that ISIS stops.
The incident is raising new questions about Germany's security approach in the wake of a spike in terrorist attacks in Europe. Police say a Polish man found shot dead in the passenger seat of the truck was the original driver, so there's concern that an armed attacker is on the run. More now from Reuters reporter Michelle Martin, who's with us live this morning from Berlin. Good morning, Michelle. What's the current status of the investigation?
Good morning. Yes, well, the latest from here is German media reporting that an identity document was found under the driver's seat in the truck that was used in the attack. And that identity document bears the name of a Tunisian man who was born in 1992. The man is believed to be using two false names as well. And German newspaper Bild is reporting that he's embedded in a large Islamist network.
So is there the possibility that there's more than one suspect beyond, say, this Tunisian man?
Well, authorities have been saying that it's not clear whether there's one perpetrator or more than one. And some media are reporting that there was probably a fight in the driver's cab of the truck. So the driver is probably injured. Local broadcaster RBB is saying that police have managed to get DNA traces from the truck and are now looking around the hospitals in Berlin and Brandenburg for the suspect. Police did arrest a suspect in the early hours of this morning in connection with the attack, but that suspect has now been released as well.
All right, so go back to the man who was found in the truck who was not the original driver. This was a Polish man, And you mentioned a possible fight, right, that investigators are looking at, because he was found kind of beat up and bruised in addition to being fatally shot.
Well, it's believed that he was shot, and media are now saying that he was likely involved in a fight with whoever else was in the truck, but the circumstances are not clear yet.
What is it with Germany's security, Michelle, that, I don't know, might make it different from other nations?
Well, Germany tends to have less video surveillance than other countries. That's probably a legacy of the past with the Nazi Gestapo police, and also in East Germany with Stasi secret police. People tend to be very cautious about those kind of things. But the government has agreed this morning to introduce more video surveillance in public places.
All right. So are there steps beyond that they might take here?
Well, it's not clear. I mean, it's still an emerging situation, but they've definitely increased the police presence around the city, in Berlin certainly, and they're talking about increasing security at Christmas markets in general. But they're saying that Christmas markets and other large events should still go ahead, that people shouldn't feel that they couldn't go to those events because of what happened in Berlin.
And explain the Christmas markets, too. I think I heard... There's something like 60 of them just in Berlin alone, right? But this is popular throughout Germany.
Yes, it's a very popular tradition in Germany to go to a Christmas market with friends or family before Christmas and drink some mulled wine. They normally sell things like sausages and little biscuits and things. And you can buy handicrafts, like little wooden Christmas decorations and lights and things like that. So yeah, it's a very popular tradition here.
I saw on your Twitter account a tweet that talked about the interior minister, I think from Bavaria, saying that there's a higher risk of Islamist attacks because of the influx of immigrants. Can you kind of piece together what's happening in Germany right now in terms of the immigrant influx?
Yes, well, I mean, the mood towards migrants has definitely soured since they started coming in large numbers last summer. I mean, back then, people were kind of applauding them as they arrived at stations. And now the anti-immigrant party, the Alternative for Germany, has really gained in support. And the AfD were very quick after the attack in Berlin to blame Merkel's refugee policies for that attack. So the anti-immigrant sentiment is only likely to rise with this, even if it doesn't turn out that the perpetrator was a migrant, because yesterday it was a Pakistani asylum seeker who was in custody. He's now been released, but still that's inflamed the whole debate. And Horst Seehofer, who's the head of the Christian Social Union, that's the Bavarian sister party to Merkel's own party, has said that we owe it to the victims of the Berlin attack to basically rethink Germany's immigration and security policy. So that's definitely re-inflamed the whole debate about migrants in Germany. And that comes at a time when Merkel's seeking a fourth term in office. So, it doesn't look as clear as before how things are going to turn out in the election next year.
We're speaking live this morning with Reuters reporter Michelle Martin, who's with us live from Berlin, talking about the investigation into Sunday's semi-truck attack on a Christmas market in Berlin. All right, so you mentioned Chancellor Angela Merkel, who is up for re-election next year. What about the implications of what happened on Sunday on, say, the re-election bid?
Yes, well, I mean, that's likely to increase support for anti-immigrant parties. People have been worried that attacks are going to happen for some time here. I mean, a lot of the migrants were entering last summer without the usual level of security, so people have been speculating for a long time that something could happen. And now that it has happened, it could well affect Merkel's popularity even more. I mean, her popularity has also declined since the refugees started coming in large numbers. That's already happened. And she herself said yesterday that it would be especially hard to bear if it is confirmed that the person who committed the attack was someone who actually came to Germany in search of protection and asylum.
Yeah. Is she doing okay in the polls still, or is she in trouble?
She's still popular compared to other European leaders, but her popularity ratings have been dented quite severely since the refugee crisis started.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for a few minutes, Michelle. Nice talking to you. Michelle Martin, Reuters reporter, with us live this morning from Berlin. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Good Wednesday to you. There's agreement that an investigation is needed to examine claims of Russian interference in the election. But there's disagreement on the type of investigation that should be conducted. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is rejecting bipartisan calls for a special committee. He says while the allegations are a serious issue, it doesn't require a select committee.
There's no question the Russians were messing around our election. It's a matter of genuine concern, and it needs to be investigated.
A select committee is a high-profile panel created by congressional leaders, the TAPS lawmakers from a variety of committees to focus on a single issue. Mr. McConnell says the Senate Intelligence Committee is able to investigate. His comments, though, are at odds with other Republicans like Arizona Senator John McCain, who prefer the special committee. CIA Director John Brennan has said the intelligence community is in agreement that Russia tried to interfere in the U.S. presidential election, although there's no evidence Moscow succeeded in helping Donald Trump win. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Kashenka is here with more of America's First News.
And teams of forensic investigators are poring over the charred remains of a fireworks market outside Mexico City after a series of blasts yesterday killed at least 31 people and injured dozens more. Videos of the blasts at the market showed a spectacular flurry of pyrotechnics exploding high into the sky like rockets in a war zone as a massive plume of smoke billowed out from the site. It was the third time in just over a decade that explosions struck the popular marketplace. ISIS has claimed responsibility for a truck attack on a crowded Berlin Christmas market. The German authorities say it came right out of the extremist group's playbook, inflicting mass casualties on a soft target fraught with symbolic meaning. State Department spokesman John Kirby.
Right now, we know of no American citizens that were affected by the presumed terrorist attack in Berlin or by the assassination of the Russian ambassador in Ankara.
The Monday night attack on the popular market left 12 dead and 48 injured. German security forces are said to be looking for a Tunisian man who may have been injured in a struggle with the driver of the truck. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's rejecting bipartisan calls for a special committee to investigate Russian interference in the U.S. election, which U.S. intelligence says was aimed in part at helping Republican Donald Trump defeat Democrat Hillary Clinton. McConnell says it's a serious issue but doesn't require a select committee. A cluster of Western states are bucking the trend of sluggish population growth, with Utah leading the pack. The state grew just over 2% from July 2015 to this July, followed closely by Nevada, Idaho, and Florida. Washington, Oregon, and Colorado also took top percentage growth spots. And Marquette University has acquired a rare copy of The Hobbit to add to its collection of materials by the renowned author J.R.R. Tolkien. And the school says the first edition, first printing copy of the classic tale is one of only 1,500 in existence. The Hobbit was published in 1937.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer. It's 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Welcome aboard. We're sticking more of our purchases on credit cards again, but contrary to popular belief, credit card debt is not rising just because of a lack of self-control. However, Americans may soon exceed the amount of credit card debt they racked up during the Great Recession. The average household with credit card debt owes about $16,000, up 10% from 10 years ago. More on the data from MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna. Maria, what's up here?
You know, when you first hear that stat, it might sound like it's because of irresponsible spending, but actually what's going on is mortgages and student loans have just kept climbing and climbing. So, yes, by the end of 2016, we are projected to, as a country, collectively owe more than we did during the recession.
Jeez. So what's the tie-in here? Well, we're taking on more homes than we had? We got more kids graduating with debt?
Right. So in some ways, you know, you could see that as a good thing. It's good that people are buying homes again, as long as, you know, presumably they can afford them. And obviously an investment in education is a good thing and could end up being a good thing in both of those cases. But in the short term, it is scary that debt is mounting so much. So, you know, I think one of the best pieces of news is that people are seemingly getting a grip on the credit card spending. And we've seen that throughout the year that it's coming down a little bit how much people are using credit cards for discretionary spending, but those other huge expenses just have kept climbing and climbing.
These numbers were hitting before the recession. Did it spike during the recession when we needed to charge things because we ran out of cash if we lost a job, for example?
Okay. Yeah, so credit card levels, debt levels were at their highest ever during 2008 and 2009, and so they have come down since then, you know, which is a good thing. But yeah, it's still a pretty astounding number. U.S. households that have credit card debt on average owe about $16,000, which is a huge amount, especially if you're paying about 20% on in interest on those credit card debt loans. So that is pretty, still a pretty huge number.
We're speaking with Maria LaMagna, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. Her piece is called "Americans Are Now in More Debt Than They Were Before the Financial Crisis." That compares more broadly, say, the credit card debt to what else we owe. We owe car loans, for example, right? You mentioned the student loans.
Right. So credit card debt is less than what we owe in student loans and auto loans. The auto loan piece actually surprised me a little bit, except that I had read previous Federal Reserve data had said the same thing, that people were taking out pretty huge amounts of auto loans and in many cases were unable to pay them. So I think that is one of the things that stands out as a huge expense that a lot of Americans are taking on at a time when they may not really be able to afford it.
What about a potential, say, credit bubble? Is there such a thing that could be foaming up again?
So the experts I spoke to for this story said that it's probably not, we're probably not careening toward a similar recession, you know, that we had before. You know, I hope that's true. I do think one piece of hopeful news is that people are starting to get a grip on the credit card spending. People with subprime credit scores are not getting credit cards in as great numbers as they were before. So there are some hopeful signs, but obviously anytime people are taking on huge amounts of debt, that's a problem. You know, the student loan piece in particular, we at MarketWatch have covered that over and over. You know, it's just a huge amount of debt, and So it is going to take a while until we can get out from under all these various kinds of debt, for sure.
Millennials too, right? I think maybe you've written about this. Just they don't seem to be using a credit card as much.
Yeah, it's part of that is because in 2009, there was a law passed that actually made it harder for people under 21 to get a credit card. So that's part of it. And then I think it is the other piece is that we have seen our parents and, you know, other people that are older than we are get into problems with debt. So That is true. Millennials use credit cards in much fewer numbers than preceding generations did and tend to go for debit cards.
Thanks, Maria. Maria LaMagna, personal finance writer from MarketWatch. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Looking for the next place to grow or expand your business? Why not look to a state that's one of America's top 10 for business, where 2,000 burdensome regulations were eliminated over the past 5 years and is now home to the sixth best entrepreneurial climate? All this and more awaits you in the state of Michigan, the state that should be the number one choice for your business. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Again, that's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, December 21. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines, more than 30 dead from a fireworks market explosion near Mexico City. German authorities looking for a Tunisian man in connection with Sunday's deadly truck ramming. 26 dead at the hands of security forces during protests in Congo. Obama being pressured to shield 200,000 illegals with minor criminal records from deportation. 17th record close for the Dow since the election. Winter arrives today, and what Bill Gates gives in Secret Santa exchanges. That story in about 20 minutes. The high-profile shootings of civilians at the hands of police and police at the hands of civilians has led to some fierce national soul-searching. That has obscured, however, a routine reality of life on the beat, where the threat of violence is often just behind a door. Wall Street Journal reporter Gary Fields took a deep dive on this. Gary, what did you and your team do?
Well, what we did was we went out, because there'd been a lot of talk, you know, during this political year, you know, about officers and officer deaths going up, and then there's been, you know, a considerable amount of talk about police-related shootings and incidents and the videotapes, and we kind of felt like what was being lost or being missed in this are the other impacts that people actually have on them, is especially police officers, in terms of, you know, the lingering impact of being involved in some of these incidents, because, you know, for every high-profile incident, you know, officers are actually facing things every day, and we don't know what the impacts are on them, on their families, you know, and they get caught in these no-win situations, you know, where things go bad all of a sudden. So we were kind of curious as to what does that mean and what are the lingering impacts of that.
All right, so as you were piecing this together, what'd you find? What really jumped out at you?
A couple of things that really jumped out. You know, one was the most recent study, which was 2015, they're probably talking about 15% of police officers suffer from some post-traumatic stress syndrome symptom. You know, 15% is, that's kind of husky. That means out of every 10 police officers you see, at least one of them is dealing with PTSD. So that was the thing that kind of leaped out at me, you know, first. And then the second thing that came clear from the officers I talked to, because as you can guess, when you're talking to officers, it's very difficult to get them to actually open up to you to talk about, hey, here are the things I'm dealing with. Here are the headaches. And so, you know, I thought it showed a whole lot of courage, for instance, on Brian Leatherwood to talk to me about how he snaps at the family, or John Nolte to talk about how he had anger management issues after their incident. The thing that left out to me, too, was just how quickly, perfectly normal day can go bad. Yeah, I'm looking at Nolte and I'm looking at the Chief Mayweather out in California, out at Fort Bragg, California. The guy's sitting there, he's literally paying utility bills for his police department. And 30 minutes later, he's backing up a patrol vehicle trying to cover one of his officers who's out in the open from this guy who's actually ambushed and already killed one police officer, and he's wearing body armor and everything else and firing off rounds at the officers.
Jeez.
I mean, just imagine what that's like. It's almost like the military in a whole lot of ways.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Gary Fields about his riveting story called The Hidden Hurt of Life on the Police Beat. And, you know, you made the point about the military, and I was going to ask that. You suspect that these are underreported numbers because the cops sometimes, I think, like soldiers perhaps, don't want to discuss this because of kind of that macho nature of the job?
Yeah, it's the macho nature of the job, and then they get looked at. You know, if you call in and say, I need to take a mental, because some departments do have mental health days, says, look, I need to take a mental health day. Well, you will get chastised for actually acknowledging that you need a mental health day.
So you mentioned what might need to be done is this survey of 800,000 men and women. Has any of the national organizations, police organizations, indicated that they might take that up?
Well, none of them have actually indicated that they're going to try to get to all of these, you know, to get to every man and woman who are actually on the streets and on the front lines. But they do try to get some of this. I think the FBI tries to collect at least a little bit of the data, but it's very, very limited, and part of what they're collecting is just the assaults on officers' data and then the injured officers' data. And they pull that primarily from the reports. It's not really an indication that they're sitting down actually talking to people. And then even with them and even with their collection, since it's a voluntary program, they have a hard time getting 100% participation. So even then, you're not sure if the numbers that they're coming up with aren't, you know, a little bit underreported.
What's the reaction been like, Gary, to the story?
It caught me off guard because of the number of folks that are actually sending, you know, emails to me going, thank you for finally somebody actually trying to talk about the other side of the coin.
I can imagine, yeah.
One guy, I'm not going to use the name, but it's an excellent story, but it opened the floodgates and I had to write. Another aspect to this story could be about those retired officers who are letting the shield down, so to speak.
Jeez.
They find themselves having problems with things not thought of for years. I'm 8 years retired and find myself withdrawing more and more from today's society and norms. You know, so I definitely kind of emailed him back and said, please tell me you're actually going to try to get some counseling and you're going to try to sit down and talk to somebody. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the examples, you know, that I'm getting. You know, I got another one. Hey, I'm a retired homicide sergeant. I want to thank you and commend you for the article. I can tell you we do not do enough for the officers post-incident. Hopefully your article resonates with administrations across the country to ensure these men and women continue to receive all the necessary treatment and support. This is the kind of stuff that I'm getting back, so I have a sneaking suspicion this is huge within that profession.
Yeah, yeah, it's really something. Wall Street Journal reporter Gary Fields. It's 19 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Good Wednesday to you. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it's safe to say that nobody had a day quite like Sacramento Kings player DeMarcus Cousins had yesterday. First, he was fined $50,000 by his own team for publicly berating a local newspaper columnist. Next, he took out all that frustration on the overmatched defense of the Portland Trail Blazers, scoring 55 points and leading the Kings to a win over the team they're chasing for a playoff spot. Near the end of the game, Cousins got ejected after barking at the Trailblazers bench and his mouthpiece came out. One referee thought he spit it at the Blazers bench and gave him a technical, which would have been Cousins' second, ejecting him from the game. He sprinted to the locker room to avoid doing anything stupid. Then the officials talked, deciding that the mouthpiece coming out was accidental, and rescinded the technical, bringing him back into the game. Then after the game, Cousins went off on a rant about the ejection, how he's treated by referees, how other teams are playing him, and then his microphone mysteriously got cut off. Theories abound about why the mic was cut, some speculating it was intentionally done by the broadcast to stop him before some not-safe-for-TV language might have come out.
Interesting.
He was pretty fired up, but then the sideline reporter who was interviewing him, you know, went on Twitter and said, "Look, no, he was going off on this kind of epic rant. That's exactly what you want on TV, right?
Absolutely.
There's no way they would have cut him off in the middle of such a great TV moment." So she said, basically, the battery pack came loose that she had for her microphone, and that's why his audio got cut off.
I know he's been hot with the media lately on more than one occasion, but man. He just seemed really mad.
Yeah,
I didn't see last night's.
Yeah,
but previously, like in the locker room, he has not looked pleased. Or the hallway leading to the locker room, he's not been kind to reporters.
As far as he's concerned, the entire league is out to get him.
That's
basically at this point.
And I would say, if I were him, hey, listen, I just dropped 55.
Yep.
And by the way, Olympic gold, Rio.
Right, exactly.
There you go. So drops the mic, leaves the room.
Right, so people have worse problems is basically what you're saying at this point.
Exactly.
And ride-hailing giant Uber, Gordon, is blaming a computer glitch for overcharging a handful of customers, including one Philadelphia woman whose bank blocked an attempt to charge her more than $28,000 for a ride. Local news reports say the woman first said she got an email from Uber warning her that her financial information had been hacked. 6 days later, Uber sent another email telling her that was wrong and that Uber's engineering team was aware of the error and fixing it. The San Francisco-based company says its engineers are working to ensure a similar glitch doesn't happen again. You know, we hear about these glitches, it's never for like $50, right? It's never like, you know, the ride was supposed to be 20 and they charged me 50. No, $28,000, which, you know, can basically ruin your entire week, you know, because like, you know, all your credit is shot, you can't use your cards or your bank account or whatever, so that's not good.
A local ride in Uber mistaken for what? 5 round trips in first class from Philadelphia to London or something like that.
Yeah, that's a heck of a glitch.
Well, 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Make Michigan your number one choice for business. Companies will need to rethink their approach to the so-called gig economy workers. Those are your freelancers, contractors, and consultants with niche skills. They have many options, and they are demanding now to be treated almost as if they're your employee. That's the takeaway from a research firm called Future Step. For employers, that means offering them even some of the benefits that might be available to your permanent employees, workers like freelance graphic designers, occasional Uber drivers, and part-time management consultants. For workers, this emerging reality means that skills need to be constantly refreshed, and the burden of finding and paying for training is shifting from employers to individuals. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, authorities have identified and are searching for a suspect in connection with the fatal truck attack on a Berlin Christmas market. Several media outlets are reporting that police found documents in the truck cab that were issued to a Tunisian man. German authorities had to release two suspects arrested in the wake of Monday's attack due to insufficient evidence. Here at home, RNC Communications Director Sean Spicer says President-elect Trump is monitoring the situation.
Creating a plan, which he's talked about doing day one as far as his 100-day plan, and making sure that that is a top priority priority and a focus of every agency, understanding the threat that we face and the measures that we have to take, politically correct or not, to make sure that America is first and foremost safe.
12 people were killed and 48 injured in the Berlin attack. At least 31 people have been killed in a powerful chain reaction explosion at Mexico's best-known fireworks market. The market was bustling with shoppers stocking up on fireworks to celebrate Christmas and New Year's when yesterday's blast occurred. It's the third devastating explosion to rock the market since 2005. President Obama has designated the bulk of U.S.-owned waters in the Arctic Ocean and certain areas of the Atlantic Ocean as indefinitely off-limits to future oil and gas leasing. The move helps put some finishing touches on President Obama's environmental legacy while also testing President-elect Trump's promise to unleash the nation's untapped energy reserves. San Francisco has named a new police chief who officials and community activists hope can restore trust in a department reeling from racially charged scandals. The black police veteran from Los Angeles is pledging to work with rank-and-file officers to move the department forward. Researchers say eating processed meat might make asthma symptoms worse. Consuming more than four portions of meat, such as sausage, salami, and ham a week is a risk. They say a preservative used in the meats aggravates airways. And with Zsa Zsa Gabor's recent passing, we were reminded that she married an astounding 9 times. And if that news made you wonder what other celebrities have married a lot, here's the answer. Elizabeth Taylor had 8 weddings, but only 7 husbands since she married Richard Burton twice. Larry King also has been married 8 times to 7 people. Martin Scorsese has been married 5 times. Lana Turner was married 8 times, while Jerry Lee Lewis and Richard Pryor were each married 7 times.
And the winner, by unanimous decision, Zsa Zsa Gabor.
That's an awful lot of weddings.
Could you imagine just trying to recall memories? I think it was with the 4th husband. Yeah, we were in Maui right for dinner. Jeez. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Every year, Reddit puts on a massive Secret Santa gift exchange. And every year, one lucky person gets Bill Gates as a Santa. And as Business Insider reports, boy, is he good at it. Alicia, also known as Reddit user Erix, who describes herself as a woman who loves video games, The Legend of Zelda, Harry Potter, and Nintendo. Her first clue that the billionaire had pulled her name was that the box was huge, and he spared no expense in shipping it overnight. Her second clue, Bill Gates wrote her a personal letter and enclosed a picture of himself with the letter wearing a Santa hat. The huge box was stuffed with individually wrapped presents, 12 in all, the remittance for her and her dog, slippers, a Zelda-themed blanket, 3 of his favorite movies, including The Martian, a Cajun cookbook, 3 special edition wireless Xbox One controllers, and an Xbox One Minecraft edition. This was a woman, by the way, who got blown off by her Secret Santa last year, but she faithfully signed up again. Turned out to be a smart move. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.